ॐ गिरजमिनन्दस्य जनार्जनशलाकाय चक्षुः सुमिलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनुभीष्टां स्थपितां दीनभूतले सायं रूपकदामयं ददति सापन्दन्तिकम् वञ्चकपशूरस्य कृपसिन्धुभैश्च पतितरं पवनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः. We've been hearing Sri Prahlad's prayers to Lord Nrisimhadev. The other exalted personalities, rishis, demigods, even the topmost of beings, Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma, they attempted to pacify Lord Nrisimhadev, who was so angry because Prahlad had been threatened by Hiranyakashipu. They could not pacify him. So Prahlad was sent forward to evoke the love, the affection of Lord Nrisimhadev so that his anger would cool down. So Prahlad's first prayers that we heard yesterday describe what the qualifications are for satisfying the Lord, because he was going to pray and request Lord Nrisimhadev for something, and he was being requested to pacify the Lord. So what are the qualifications that one may have so that the Lord would listen to him, to his prayers, or be especially inclined to hear and satisfy the prayer? What are the qualifications? So Prahlad states that in the opening verses of his prayers, by explaining first that he himself had no qualities that would be able to satisfy the Lord. Look who was praying, and they could not pacify him. Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, so many exalted personalities, and here he was, born as the son of Hiranyakashipu, as a daitya, as an asura, as a demon. How is it possible that he could succeed in quelling the Lord's anger? Well, these exalted personalities could not succeed. So Prahlad, by speaking of his own disqualification, tells the first qualification. And that qualification is humility. To have a very, very, very humble, meager estimation of oneself, one's power, one's strength, one's good qualities. And then Prahlad explains that if one has exalted qualities, be it strength or wealth or intelligence or beauty or renunciation or the ability to control the mind, but lacks one quality, that quality being devotion, he has no ability to satisfy the Lord. And on the other hand, there's the example of Gajendra, who is a powerful elephant, but an elephant, an animal. And because he had devotion, even though he was an animal possessing none of the other exalted qualities, he wasn't intelligent, he wasn't literate, he wasn't learned, he wasn't beautiful, wasn't renounced, but because he had the quality of devotion, devotional service, he was able to satisfy the Lord. And Prahlad continues explaining that if one has devotional service, even if one is in the worst situation, he can purify himself, purify his family. Well, someone materially in an exalted position, a brahminical position, one situated in goodness. He cannot purify himself, what to speak of his family. So how exalted is a devotee? And why does the Lord listen to his devotee? Why is he satisfied? Because he is himself, in himself, supremely satisfied. In fact, there is nothing outside of himself. So he has no lack. By definition, God is fully self-satisfied and lacking nothing, because there is nothing outside of him that he would miss or feel that he needed, because everything is part of himself or his energies. So on that side, it is not that we can offer anything to God or pray to him in such a way that he is satisfied by our words. But, Prahlad explains, it is for the benefit of one who is praying, who is making the offering, who is offering something in devotional service. It is for his benefit. He is exalted by his words. He is improved as he prays to the Lord, as he engages in devotional service, as he surrenders to the Lord. And then Prahlad ends this section saying that anyone, regardless of his position, and again, Prahlad is speaking about himself, being born in a demoniac family, the son of Hiranyakashipu, one would naturally expect him to have the qualities of his father due to his family. But Prahlad is saying that regardless of what situation one finds oneself in, with his own ability, whatever his individuality is, every person can be purified in this world if he offers prayers to the Lord and hears the Lord's glories. So this praying is vandanam, or praying or glorifying the Lord is kirtanam, and hearing is called shravanam. And these are the basic principles of devotional service. Shravanam, kirtanam, vishnusmaranam, parasevanam, archanam, vandanam, dasyam, sakyam, atmanavedanam. Prahlad has explained this previously. These are the principles of devotional service. Hearing about the Lord, chanting the Lord's glories, remembering him, offering prayers to him, offering obeisance to him, serving in one way or another, doing deity worship, worshipping the deity. These items are composed of spiritual energy. And by engaging, when the soul, regardless of his position, engages his consciousness in these things, he, by the Lord's mercy, can connect with him. And then the Lord becomes pleased and he uplifts the devotee. So Prahlad will now continue. This is text 13, 7th canto, chapter 9. So he's established first how to pray in such a way that the Lord will hear one's prayers, a very important point to establish. And it has nothing to do with one's external qualifications or situation. It has simply to do with one is accepting that he is tiny and insignificant, and the Lord is great. He is the Lord. He is great. And therefore, for my benefit, I am offering my words, my time, my energy, my intelligence, whatever I have obtained through my hard work. For my benefit, I am taking the opportunity to make these offerings to him with great devotion, understanding my position. Jivera sarupoi krishner nityadas. So then, what is Prahlad going to pray for now that he has established what it takes on the prayers, from the prayers point, so that the Lord will hear him? What Mo Prahlad pray for? Text 13. O my Lord, all the demigods headed by Lord Brahma are sincere servants of your lordship, who are situated in a transcendental position. Therefore they are not like us, Prahlad and his father, the demon Hiranyakashipu. Your appearance in this fearsome form is your pastime for your own pleasure. Such an incarnation is always meant for the protection and improvement of the universe, because there was Lord Nisringadev, so ferocious and so fearful in his anger, that even Lakshmi Devi feared to approach him, and the demigods would not come near him. They were so terrified, because he was the personified anger of the Lord. So he's saying, Prahlad is saying, that you've come, your demigods are such great devotees, they're sincere servants of you. And your pastime, you've come as Lord Nisringadev for your own pleasure to protect the demigods. Next verse. My Lord Nisringadev, this is text 14, please therefore cease your anger now that my father, the great demon Hiranyakashipu, has been killed. You've come to protect the demigods, Pritranaya Sadunam, Vinashaya Chadiskritam, Yada Yadahi Dhammasya, Ghanir Bhavati Bharata, Bhutanam Adhammasya, Tadapmanam Shijamyam. You've come to protect the demigods who are your devotees, but that those who you have come to protect and save are now afraid. And the purpose of your incarnation has been fulfilled, because you have killed Hiranyakashipu. So now there is no longer any need for you to be angry. So cease your anger now that my father, the great demon Hiranyakashipu, has been killed. Since even a saintly person takes pleasure in the killing of a scorpion or a snake, all the worlds have achieved great satisfaction because of the death of this demon. Now they are confident of their happiness, and they will always remember your auspicious incarnation in order to be free from fear. There's an interesting little pastime that took place in Prabhupada's life regarding this verse that says, even a saintly person takes pleasure in the killing of a scorpion or a snake. Because saintly persons, sadhus, shantas, saintly persons, they do not like to see others suffer. Indeed, they experience pain when others suffer. Yet, even a saintly person becomes happy when a scorpion or a snake is killed. Why? Because they have, these creatures are very, very, very envious. And envy disallows one from being happy. So one who is very envious, why is someone envious? Why can't he be happy? Because there are so many others in this world who have something that he may not have. So if one has that type of a mood, that he's looking at whatever someone else had, if someone has anything that he doesn't have, he's in so much misery and he wishes harm to that person, even deeper than jealousy. Not only does he want that thing, he'll tend to wish harm for that person, to that person. So an envious person can never be happy, never. Because he's seeing, as he sees the world, so many things that he wants and that others have. So snakes, scorpions, very envious creatures. They just bite with their poisonous bites. So when they are killed, their next birth is always higher. So a saintly person, although he doesn't like to see others suffer, any creature, even an ant, He feels happiness when a scorpion or a snake, whose only business is to cause trouble to others, is killed. And therefore, that snake or scorpion, that creature is elevated. So once Prabhupada was in Sridham Mayapur, when he was a young devotee, and his spiritual master, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, was on this planet. And you can still see the place where this took place. There was a garden. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was on the balcony of a building. And some of the either workers or devotees or someone, they had captured a snake there, a cobra. Because in Mayapur there are many cobras and snakes. And they held it up to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, asking him what should they do with it. They had captured it. And he said, kill him. So Srila Prabhupada was surprised at that time. He notes this, that he was surprised. Oh, my Guru Maharaj has ordered this creature killed. He was in a helpless position. He's offered him killed. And he was a little bit, he couldn't understand exactly. But then, later he explained that he was reading the Bhagavatam and he saw this verse. And he became very, very happy because he understood his spiritual master's mood as a saintly person was not at all compromised. So Prahlad is saying this, that, oh Lord Nrisingadev, everyone is happy now because you have killed this snake-like person, my demoniac father, Hiranyakashipu. Now you can give up your anger. All the worlds have achieved great satisfaction because of the death of this demon. Now they are confident of their happiness and they will always remember your auspicious incarnation in order to be free from fear. Prabhupada's short purport. The most important point in this verse is that although saintly persons never desire the killing of any living entity, they take pleasure in the killing of envious living entities like snakes and scorpions. Hiranyakashipu was killed because he was worse than a snake or a scorpion, and therefore everyone was happy. Now there was no need for the Lord to be angry because his purpose had been fulfilled. Hiranyakashipu had been dispatched. The devotees can always remember the form of Nrisingadev when they are in danger. And therefore the appearance of Nrisingadev was not at all inauspicious. The Lord's appearance is always worshipable and auspicious for all sane persons and devotees. So he continues. My Lord, who are never conquered by anyone, he's called Ajita, the unconquerable Lord. I am certainly not afraid of your ferocious mouth and tongue, your eyes bright like the sun, or your frowning eyebrows. I do not fear your sharp pinching teeth, your garland of intestines, your mane soaked with blood, or your high wedge-like ears. Nor do I fear your tumultuous roaring, which makes elephants flee to distant places, or your nails, which are meant to kill your enemies. So there were so many fearsome, terrifying features that Lord Nrisingadev had, from his mane soaked with blood to his claws to his roar to his pointed ears. But Prahlad said, I do not fear these things. Here is Prabhupada's purport. Lord Nrisingadev's fierce appearance was certainly most dangerous for the non-devotees. But for Prahlad Maharaj, such a fearful appearance was not at all disturbing. The lion is very fearsome for other animals, but its cubs are not at all afraid of the lion. So Prahlad was like the cub of this lion, Lord Nrisingadev. The water of the sea is certainly dreadful for all living entities on the land, But within the sea, even the small fish is unafraid. Why? Because the small fish has taken shelter of the big ocean. It is said that although great elephants are taken away by the flooding waters of the river, the small fish swim opposite the current. Therefore, although the Lord sometimes assumes a fierce appearance to kill the Duskritis, or the miscreants, or the demoniac people, the devotees worship Him. Keshavadrita Narahari Rupa Jaya Jagadisha Hari. The devotee always takes pleasure in worshipping the Lord and glorifying the Lord in any form, either pleasing or fierce. So Prahlad didn't fear the Lord, even though the Lord's form was so ferocious, because he had taken shelter of the Lord fully. He feared nothing, actually. What is fearsome if one is under the shelter of the Lord? Everything is fearsome and dangerous and causing us to defend and protect ourselves if we are not under the Lord's shelter. So then Prahlad explains that the demigods and others may be afraid of your fierce form, but I am not afraid. But what do I fear? O most powerful, insurmountable Lord, who are kind to the fallen souls, I have been put into the association of demons as a result of my activities, and therefore I am very much afraid of my condition of life within this material world. When will that moment come when you will call me to the shelter of your lotus feet, which are the ultimate goal for liberation from conditioned life? So Prahlad doesn't fear Lord Nrisingadev, but he fears the material world and being trapped within the material world. Why does he fear the material world? Because the material world is a very dangerous place. Padam padam yad vipadam natesham. And no one knows when the material world will strike him down. No one knows. We're all dreaming, imagining that we'll live for so many years very peacefully. We're dreaming, projecting into the future. Our life is going to go this way, and this will happen wonderfully. You know, climb up, up, upwards, upwards, always upwards. But actually, the material world is a place of danger. Padam, padam, yad vipadam, vipadam, danger at every step. It is compared to an ocean of danger. Samasrita ye palapalava plavam. Mahatpadam punyaya shomarai. Bhavambudhi vachapadam parampadam. Parampadam na yadvipadam na tesha. So if one takes shelter of the Lord, and Prahlad is doing that, then that great ocean shrinks to the size of vatsapadam, the size of the hoof impression of a cow or a calf, that one can easily step over, although no one can swim across the ocean. Here's Prabhupada's purport. Being in the material world is certainly miserable, but certainly when one is put into the association of asuras or atheistic men, it is intolerably so. One may ask why the living entity is put into the material world. Indeed, sometimes foolish people deride the Lord for having put them here. Actually, everyone is put into conditional life according to his karma. Therefore, Prahlad Maharaj, representing all the other conditioned souls, admits that he was put into life among the asuras because of the results of his karma. In other words, no one should complain, think themselves victimized by the difficulties of the circumstances that they happen to find themselves within. Because no one is actually a victim of others. Everyone is simply in a situation due to their own karma. Karma means reactions according to what we ourselves have done. Like prisoners in the prison, we blame the judge for placing us in the prison. So how foolish is that? It's our crime that has placed us, our misdeeds, our selfish activities that have placed us in exactly the circumstances we're in. It is not Krishna's fault. So Prahlad is saying it is due to my misdeeds that I am placed in this family and I've associated with this atheistic person, my father, Hiranyakashipu. The Lord is known as Kripana Vatsal because He is extremely kind to the conditioned souls. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, therefore, the Lord appears whenever there are discrepancies in the execution of religious principles. Yada yada hi dhammasya glanir bhavati bharata abhutanam tadatmanam abhutanam adhammasya tadatmanam sri jamyaham. The Lord is extremely anxious to deliver the conditioned souls, and therefore He instructs all of us to return home back to Godhead. Sarvadamam pritya ja mamikam sharanam vraja. Thus Prahlad Maharaj expected that the Lord, by His kindness, would call him again to the shelter of His lotus feet. In other words, everyone should be eager to return home back to Godhead, taking shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, and thus being fully trained in Krishna consciousness. Prahlad continues with his prayers. I'm not afraid of you, my Lord, despite your fierce features, but I am afraid of material conditioned life and bad association. Oh, great one. So what is the remedy for this? Oh, great one. Oh, Supreme Lord. Because of combination with pleasing and displeasing circumstances, and because of separation from them, one is placed in a most regrettable position within heavenly or hellish planets, as if burning in a fire of lamentation. Although there are many remedies by which to get out of miserable life, any such remedies in the material world are more miserable than the miseries themselves. The cures cause us more trouble than the disease. We are placed in lamentable circumstances. We are placed in difficulties. Things are forced upon us that we don't like. And then we act to change our circumstances and we get ourselves in more difficult circumstances due to our actions, more entangled. The remedies are more miserable than the miseries themselves, Prahlad says. This is not cynical, this is accurate. Therefore, Prahlad says, I think that the only remedy is to engage in your service. Kindly instruct me in such service. There, he's saying what the cure actually is. Somehow, let me be engaged as your servant in your service. Prabhupada's purport. Prahlad Maharaj aspired to engage in the service of the lotus feet of the Lord. After the death of his father, who was materially very opulent, Prahlad would have inherited his father's property, which extended throughout the world. But Prahlad Maharaj was not inclined to accept such material opulence. For whether one is in the heavenly or hellish planets, or is rich or a poor man's son, material conditions are everywhere. Therefore, no condition of life is at all pleasing. If one wants the uncontaminated pleasure of blissful life, he must engage himself in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. Material opulence may be somewhat pleasing for the time being, but to come to that temporary pleasing condition, one must work extremely hard. When a poor man is rich, he may be better situated. But to come to that position, He had to accept so many miseries. The fact is that in material life, whether one is miserable or happy, both conditions are miserable. Like a fish out of water. Whether the fish out of water has very tasty worms to eat, or nothing to eat, or a soft cushion to lie upon, or he has nothing, or a rough rock to lie upon, he's out of water. Therefore, whatever situation he is in is miserable and causes misery. If we don't get what we desire, we become angry. If we do get what we desire, we become greedy. If we are angry and greedy, can we be happy? If we are greedy, if we possess the whole world, we won't be happy. If we're angry, if we destroy the whole world, we won't be happy. So, actually, the only cure is to get out of the material world, understanding that every situation in the material world is miserable one way or another. Either we have to work to overcome a difficult situation and the work is hard, or we accept the miserable condition, that's hard, or we struggle to get out of it and we can't get out of it, that's difficulty. The very nature of the material world externally is difficult. The real cure is an internal cure, and that is, as Prahlada is saying, is devotional service. To develop one's loving relationship with Krishna. If one actually wants happy, blissful life, one must become Krishna conscious and constantly engage in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. That is the real remedy. The entire world is under the illusion that people will be happy by advancing in materialistic measures to counteract the miseries of conditional life. But this attempt will never be successful. Humanity must be trained to engage in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. That is the purpose of the Krishna consciousness movement. There can be no happiness in changing one's material conditions, for everywhere there is trouble and misery. Such a radical proposal, so contrary to modern materialistic thinking. There is no situation within the material world that we place ourselves in will be happy. No material change can bring us the happiness that we, as eternal souls, are deeply longing for. Everywhere there is trouble and misery. Prahlad saying, therefore, I don't fear you. I fear material life, and I'm waiting for you to call me, train me. I want to serve you. I want to end this material predicament. I want to live as a soul, not die, which is the condemnation, the sentence that every body is condemned to. So I want to engage in devotional service, and that is the only remedy for the miseries of material existence. And how would he like to engage in that devotional service? Text 18. O my Lord Nrisimhadev, by engaging in your transcendental loving service, in the association of devotees who are liberated souls, hunsas, I shall become completely uncontaminated by the association of the three modes of material nature and be able to chant the glories of your Lordship, who are so dear to me. I shall chant your glories following exactly in the footsteps of Lord Brahma and his disciplic succession. In this way, I shall undoubtedly be able to cross the ocean of nescience. Read Prabhupada's purport to this verse. A devotee's life and duty are very well explained here. So that's Prabhupada's first line of the purport. But probably, if I ask anyone, or even tried to remember myself what did the verse say as the essence of the life of a devotee. It would be very difficult to recall it. Does anyone remember without looking at the book? I remember a few things, but I read it, so it's easier for me. Anyone remember any points?
Serving in association with devotees.
Thereby become uncontaminated from all, and therefore one will be able to chant the Lord's glories. That's what I remembered. It's chant the glories of the Lord, of your Lordship, who are so dear to me. Because the Lord is dear to him. He wants these things which are so favorable to be able to chant his glories. If one doesn't have the seed of love, of considering the Lord his dearmost object, then these things don't mean anything to him. Okay, I can chant the Lord's glories. I can live with the devotees. So what? I can become uncontaminated. So what? But when one has even a trace of desire to serve Krishna and love for Krishna, his contaminations are very painful to him. His contaminations means his inconsistencies, his materialistic tendencies, his materialistic selfish desires. They're very painful to him. Why? Because they act exactly counter to what he wants in the core of his heart, and yet he's controlled by these, the mode of passion, the mode of ignorance, and forcing him, whipping him, making him act contrary to his own interest. And his own interest is to be always engaged in the Lord's service. So let me read the verse again, and then we'll read the purport. Just remember, the first line of Prabhupada's purport is, a devotee's life and duty are very well explained here. Oh, my Lord Nisringadev, Prahlad says, by engaging in your transcendental loving service, in the association of devotees who are liberated souls, hansas, I shall become completely uncontaminated by the association of the three modes of material nature, and be able to chant the glories of your Lordship, who are so dear to me. I shall chant your glories, following exactly in the footsteps of Lord Brahma and his disciplic succession. In this way, I shall undoubtedly be able to cross the ocean of nescience. Prabhupada's purport. A devotee's life and duty are very well explained herein. As soon as a devotee can chant the holy name and glories of the Supreme Lord, he certainly comes to the liberated condition. Liberated means free. Attachment for glorifying the Lord by hearing and chanting the holy name and activities of the Lord, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, certainly brings one to the position where material contamination is absent. Right in the beginning of the Bhagavatam, this is said, Srinvatam Svakata Krishna Punya Shravana Kirtanam Ridhyanta Sto Yabhadrani. All the contaminations within the heart, Ridhyanta Sto Abhadrani Vidunoti Suritsatam. Krishna will remove them if one becomes eager to hear his messages. One should chant the bona fide songs received from the disciplic succession. In Bhagavad Gita it is said that the chanting is powerful when one follows the disciplic succession. Evam parampara praptam imam raja sheo vidu. Manufacturing many ways of chanting will never be effective. However, chanting the song or the narration left by the previous acharyas, Mahajano Jinagata Sapanta, is extremely effective, and this process is very easy. Therefore, in this verse, Prahlad Maharaj uses the word anja, easily. Accepting the thoughts of exalted authorities through disciplic succession is certainly much easier than the method of mental speculation by which one tries to invent some means to understand the absolute truth. The best process is to accept the instructions of the previous acharyas and follow them.
then God realization and self realization becomes extremely easy. By following this easy method, one is liberated from the contamination of the material modes of nature. And thus one can certainly cross the ocean of nescience, in which there are many miserable conditions. By following the footsteps of the great acharyas, one associates with the hamsas or paramhamsas, those who are completely freed from material contamination. Indeed, by following the instruction of the acharyas, one is always freed from all material contamination, and thus one's life becomes successful if one reaches the goal of life. This material world is miserable, regardless of one's standard of life. Of this there is no doubt. Attempts to mitigate the miseries of material existence by material methods will never be successful. One must take to Krishna consciousness to become really happy, otherwise happiness is impossible. One might say that becoming advanced in spiritual life also involves tapasya, voluntary acceptance of some inconvenience. However, such inconvenience is not as dangerous as material attempts to mitigate all miseries. By following in the footsteps of the great acharyas, one associates with the hamsas or paramhamsas, those who are completely freed from material contamination. If we follow the great devotees, follow their instructions in the disciplic succession, then we are associating with them. And that frees us. And then the final verse we'll read tonight, text 19, describes again the result of the material remedies. They can help us, but the help is temporary. The benefit is small. The only ultimate protection, Prahlad is going to say, comes only from Krishna. My Lord Nisringadeva, O Supreme, because of a bodily conception of life, embodied souls neglected and not cared for by you cannot do anything for their betterment. Whatever remedies they accept, although perhaps temporarily beneficial, are certainly impermanent. For example, a father and mother cannot protect their child. A physician and medicine cannot relieve a suffering patient. And a boat on the water cannot protect a drowning man. What does this mean? A parent cannot protect his child. A boat cannot protect one from the water? Prabhupada will explain. Purport. Through parental care, through remedies for different kinds of disease, and through means of protection on the water, in the air, and on land, there is always an endeavor for relief from various kinds of suffering in the material world. But none of them are guaranteed measures for protection. It is not the medicine that cures the disease, because we see that one person takes the medicine and isn't cured, and another person takes the very same medicine and is cured. So is it the medicine that's the determining factor? Or is there something different than the medicine that determines who gets cured and who doesn't? So that different factor is the ultimate factor. It is Krishna. They may be beneficial temporarily, but they afford no permanent benefit. Despite the presence of a father and mother, a child cannot be protected from accidental death, disease, and various other miseries. No one can help, including the parents. Ultimately, the shelter is the Lord, and one who takes shelter of the Lord is protected. Upon this principle, we really should live our lives. That other things may, in one sense, help us, but unless the protection, the benefit, is sanctioned by the Lord, nothing can help us. And if the Lord wishes us to be protected,
or benefited, nothing can stop that protection or benefit from falling upon us. So where is the real shelter? Prabhupada tells of one man who anytime he got sick, he didn't run to the doctor or the emergency room. He went to the Ganga, the Ganges River, and he took some water and he was cured. Such deep faith, such deep shelter of the Lord he was taking, and the Lord reciprocated in that way. We can't imitate because we don't have that type of depth in our Krishna consciousness, and we shouldn't imitate. But yet, we should learn and know where our ultimate and actual shelter is, and where our protection ultimately is. When we're dying, what are we going to do? We're going to beg the doctor to extend our lives. Please give me another hour or another week or another month. Please, please, I beg you. I'll write you a check. What do you have? Can I charge it? No, 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 no. We, in our lives, must learn the art of taking full shelter of Krishna. In our lives, so that at the end of our life, we'll be practiced in doing this. Because if we've taken shelter of materialistic limited things in this life, we will try to take shelter of those things when we're dying. And we're going to become terrified when those things and their ability to help us cave in. Ultimately, the shelter is the Lord, and one who takes shelter of the Lord is protected. This is guaranteed, Prabhupada says. As the Lord says in Bhagavad Gita 9:31, Kaunteya pratijanihi name bhakta pranashyati. O son of Kunti, declare it boldly that my devotee never... For unless one is protected by the mercy of the Lord, no remedial measure can act effectively. One should consequently depend fully on the causeless mercy of the Lord. Although as a matter of routine duty, one must of course accept other remedial measures, no one can protect one who is neglected by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So there is the balance there. Dutifully, we do whatever is required in the standard material sense to maintain our bodies, to take care of those who are dependent upon us, to work our way through the world. But our dependence and our shelter isn't and shouldn't be, not isn't because too often it is, but shouldn't be our attempt or anything external. Our true shelter and our hope and protection must rest in the lotus feet of Krishna, unless we are meant to be very disappointed in this world. In this material world, everyone is trying to counteract the onslaught of material nature. But everyone is ultimately fully controlled by material nature. It's like fighting with a big, powerful boxer or something. He's so much bigger and more powerful than we are. And if we dodge one punch, we feel ourselves successful. But it's just a matter of time before we're going to get floored. That is the material situation. Because we're out of our league over our heads, the material nature is powerful, so powerful. It is empowered by Krishna. Daivyesha gunamayi mama maya dratya. We cannot overcome it on our own. This is, again, not cynical. This is practical. This is reality. Where is our shelter? Where do we look when we're in difficulty? Just check this. Everyone is under the control of nature. Therefore, even though so-called philosophers and scientists try to surmount the onslaught of material nature, they have not been able to do so.
Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita 13:9 that the real sufferings of the material world are four: janma, mritya, jara, vyadi, birth, death, old age, disease. Has one person, even the greatest of the scientists, been able to conquer these things? Has anyone wanted to die? Since the beginning of time, no one has wanted to die, but how many survivors have there been over the last millions and millions of years? Because the material nature crushes everyone. So, in the history of the world, no one has been successful in conquering these miseries imposed by material nature. Prakriti kriyamana ni gunai kamani sarvasha. Nature, Prakriti, is so strong that no one can overcome her stringent lotus. What does stringent mean? We use that word all the time. What does stringent mean? Very strict, unbreakably strict laws of nature. You will get old. I don't want to get old. I'm free. Well, doesn't make any difference. The law of nature is stringent, strict, unbreakably strict. Your body will become old, like it or not. No one can overcome her stringent laws. So-called scientists, philosophers, religionists, and politicians should therefore conclude that they cannot offer facilities to the people in general. They should make vigorous propaganda to awaken the populace and raise them to the platform of Krishna consciousness, God consciousness. Our humble attempt, Prabhupada says, to propagate the Krishna consciousness movement all over the world is the only remedy that can bring about a peaceful and happy life. We can never be happy without the mercy of the Supreme Lord, Tvad Upechitanam. If we keep displeasing our Supreme Father, we shall never be happy within this material world in either the upper or lower planetary systems. So on Wednesday, if Krishna allows, we'll continue with a very powerful prayers of the Lord of Prahlad Maharaj to the Lord. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Sri Prahlad Maharaj ki jai. Lord Shingadev ki jai. Om Premanandi. It's not that they...
They
have heat sensors. That's why they go in your ears too. You have the heat. They're just built in that way to do that. It's not that they're thinking, if I just wait a moment, he's going to turn around, and then I'll get him like that. I'll fix him. He's tried to swat me yesterday. I'll get him back and get it. Takes one to know one.
Okay, so not to kill them then.
Well, yeah, you can kill them if they're biting you. They bite you. But yeah, generally speaking, what happens is because a mosquito, he's on empty, and then he bites you, and then he fills up with your blood, and that will keep him one alive for a day. So usually, if you kill them, there's blood. That means they've already done it. So it's actually done no good to kill them. You haven't stopped them from biting you. Usually. They have no consciousness at all, practically speaking. They're just acting.
They can't be vegetarian.
There's so many mosquitoes alive in places where there are no humans and mammals. So somehow or another they figure out how to get what they need to keep alive. Anyway, rather than this becoming a class on mosquitoes, I'd rather go home.
Anyone have any other questions or comments? Thank you.